It's the Score North Twin Show.
We should really add Trevor Plouffe's face to our highly produced, high-level graphics package on Tuesdays here on the YouTube channel. Tuesdays with Trevor, John Boy Media, talking baseball, baseball today, doing some work later this month even with Bally Sports North when the Twins go out west.
That's right.
I think the Twins should go out to L.A. before the Dodgers come here in like early April on the schedule. Feels like a weird scheduling quirk.
Yeah, I was at Dodger Stadium talking to some of the Dodgers, to Muncy in particular, and he's like, yeah, we're going to Chicago, we're going to Minnesota. I was like, man, like those are two of the coldest places right now. What are we doing here? So, and then they had some weather in Chicago, and I think was it misting yesterday?
Yeah, it was like levitating rain. Like it was the weirdest thing. It was the strangest weather there yesterday. And then I will say 2-hour, 15-minute game, not the result you want for the Twins. But at 9 o'clock, it just started coming down, so that they did kind of sneak out of there just in time.
Who were those five kids, like young men sitting behind home plate? Were like they those TikTok like influencer guys? Like who were those guys sitting front row? Did you notice that?
I didn't.
I was up in the press box. I didn't see him. But Judd, did you see him? Judd's our big TikTok influencer guy.
I do love the TikTok, but
Judd's big on the TikTok. Judd's huge on TikTok.
I love TikTok.
Dude, actually, funny story. So Judd and I were at Vikings training camp early August, and we're watching football practice, and there's like 2,000 or 3,000 Vikings fans kind of hanging out, and we're inside the velvet ropes as, you know, credentialed members of the esteemed media. And I don't know, a fan who was like maybe 20 or 21 years old kind of leans, got his like Justin Jefferson jersey, and he leans over the railing. He's like, hey, Judd, Phil, you guys are the guys from that Score North TikTok channel, right?
Yeah.
And we had to think about it for a second. We're like, oh, yeah. Like,
yes, we are.
Definitely 100% our clips are on. But the kids view Judd as a TikTok star more than anything else. It's great.
I think most of us do.
Yeah.
I'll take what I can get, Trevor. I'll take what I can get.
So, hey, before we dive in and actually talk Twins and decide if we should be panicking after a 3-5 start and have some fun with Trevor on the baseball side, let's pop open the grid here, boys. The Immaculate Grid has the Twins on it. We'll put this on the brand new Score North Twin Show YouTube channel for the visual audience. And our goal here is because this is the type of grid where we can get a really low rarity score. So we're looking for obscure options if possible. And for the audio audience, I'll explain this to you. We're looking for a twin who was a Brewer, a twin who played at least one game at third base. I know someone. A twin who was born outside of the 50-state United States. And then we're looking for a Tiger who was a Brewer, a Tiger who played a game at third base or more, and a Tiger from outside the 50 states, plus a Cub Brewer, a Cub third baseman, and a Cub born outside the 50 states.
Okay.
So, Trev, where do you want to start here?
I feel like I kind of want to run the Twins side, if that's okay.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you think Kyle Loesch should be a good rarity scorer guy for us, Twins Brewers?
He's going to be single digits for sure.
Yeah. I hit a homer off him when he was a Brewer, a long ball. Nice. So that's kind of how I remember that. I mean, nice. I guess there could be some better ones, but I don't know if a lot of people like know Kyle Loesch is a Brewer.
Your guy, Anthony Swarzak, was a Brewer for a year, too.
That'll be better than Kyle Loesch.
Swarzak, yeah. Well, what about, here's another one from the early 2000s. Do you guys remember Matt Kinney? He wore the rec specs.
Okay.
He went Twins to Brewers.
You're going deep. You're going real rare. Okay. Well, put him in then. That's going to be the rarest one.
Should we try Matt Kinney? K-I-N-N.
There he is.
E-Y. Matt Kinney. Let's be 1% or lower.
Yep.
0.06.
Oh, 0.06. Yeah, 0.06. Let's go, dude. Let's go.
That's good.
Have you ever put yourself in the Immaculate Grid before? Do we know how rare?
Of course. You know, the problem with me is I'm not as rare anymore because people that listen to our shows always try to put me in and tag me. So then all of a sudden I'm, a 5%er when I really should be like a Matt Kinney level.
That's rare there, man. You're not.
Dude, yeah, I think let's put you a little higher than 0.06 here, Coach Trev. Okay. So we know we can get Coach Trev in here. We mentioned Brian Buescher was a random Twin of the Week on this show like 2 weeks ago.
Brian Buescher's a great one for the played third base one game. What about Matt Tolbert? Do you think he would be a low
Matty
one?
Matty Tolbert.
Yeah, Matt Tolbert's good.
That's a Matt great Tolbert. One.
Just because.
Let's do it.
Matt, what's he doing now?
Who knows?
nervously watching baseball.
Some .1.
.1 for a set. Oh,
do you guys know like what Matt Tolbert used to do? Like literally in the hotel hallways, he would be working on his jumps. Like he'd be act like he was stealing bases.
Yeah.
And so many dry hacks everywhere. This guy was a nut.
I remember the dry hacks. Just he would literally be like in the clubhouse doing like dry hacks at his locker.
Oh,
just grinding it out,
God.
Man. But okay. He could play everywhere. So
this
there we have a lot
so
of
so many guys we can go on the last one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sam Deduno, that's like my favorite twin ever.
That's a great one.
Deduno would be good.
I mean, that there's like a 2011-12 closet full of yes. options here. Esmerling yes. Vasquez, we've used before. Scott Diamond's from Canada.
That's a good one.
Luke Hughes.
Luke Hughes from
Aussie
Australia.
Boy. There's a lot of good Australians.
Glenn
we
Williams?
Use for sure.
Glenn Williams.
Yeah, let's do Glenn Williams. That's a good
Glenn
one.
Glenn Williams.
Some of the Aussies, that's a good yep. James Beresford.
James Beresford. Oh, man.
That's a great one.
Glenn Williams, .04. So we're at a 0.2% right now. Right. We just plowed through the that's one of the better performances that you can probably have in a row of Immaculate Grid.
Yes.
Luke wow. Hughes might have got us less than Matt Tolbert on that played third base one game.
Oh, good call, yeah.
Did he play? He played some third.
He probably played some third, right?
I'm sure he had to.
Yeah, I'm sure.
What was the story about the day that Joe Mauer had to play right field because Luke Hughes missed his flight at the Rochester airport because he was sitting at the wrong gate?
I remember Mauer playing right field, but I don't remember the story.
I think that's why. I think he had like headphones on. And he was sitting at the wrong gate at the Rochester airport, and he looked up and his flight had left.
That's pretty good. I think I do remember that now that you mentioned it.
Oh, man. Would everyone go, mate? Oh, the flight's gone.
Are we going through this whole thing?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
All right.
Let's do it. Who was the third baseman for the Tigers that you played against, Trev?
So many options.
Nick Castellanos, Brandt. But he was never a
deep drive to left.
Yeah, no kidding. This one.
Willie Castro.
Yeah.
Oh.
Willie Castro. Yeah. Yeah.
You might be forgotten about, kind of. I mean, Tigers fans probably.
I mean, to go way back when, there was like Tom Brookins was their third baseman when I was a kid.
If you want to go old school, we might have a good chance at a lower. I mean, Willie Castro is so recent.
But you kind of forget about the recent guys. Like anytime there's like a sure. like a one team square,
yeah.
like
yeah.
recent guys actually are, because everyone's trying to think old school.
Yeah. So do we go like Willie Castro or do we pull a guy from Judd's childhood?
Go Castro.
I'd say the childhood is better because we're going to get a lower score.
Judd, you got
I think Coach Trev is right on this.
Okay. Tom Brookins.
Tom Brookins.
Brookins.
There he is. 1979 to 1990.
3%.
3%.
Oh, boo.
Wow,
yeah,
dude.
That's what I'm saying.
Look at that mustache on Tom Brookins.
It's the 70s, man. The 80s. Those
how about Willie Castro for the Born Outside?
Yep, that's good.
Okay.
Like United States, right?
I like that.
Yeah.
What about Al Albuquerque?
Or Jair Jurgens?
Al Albuquerque used
Where's
to pitch
Willie
against you guys constantly.
Willie...
Al Albuquerque.
There he is.
He was like literally...
Yeah, no E game. On Willie Cash.
No E.
0.5.
0.5.
I like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's knock out the... So Brewers, Tigers... Boy...
Brewers, I mean, Prince Fielder's going to be obvious.
Phil Koch, did he ever pitch for the Brewers?
Ooh, oh, dude, that's Coke. A good one if it's accurate.
I don't know if he played for the Brewers, Coke. Though.
Ben Ogilvy, the outfielder who has the, I believe it's still, or was the longest home run in Metrodome history, he definitely played for both teams. I don't know if
okay.
that's super
I'm
rare.
I'm good with that.
I'm ben fine with that, too.
Ben
I was gonna,
Ogilvy.
I was going to say Joaquin Soria, but that's, I don't know, it's probably not the lowest. Ben Ogilvy. Old school sports dad here. This is... What? 5%?
See, this is the problem. I'm getting killed by old people.
Yeah, all those olds,
all
they know
people,
those baseball
stop.
Players.
What are you, like, stop doing the grid.
Bunch of old heads found the ImmaculateGrid.com, I guess. It's too old. Okay. Let's finish strong here. I'll give you a couple obscure. We've used for obscure Cubs because we all, Judd and I grew up watching the Cubs on WGN.
Sure.
My family's from Chicago. And I've told you guys about former number two overall pick Tyler Houston on the grid before. He was a third baseman. He also played for the Brewers and the Cubs. We could use him on either one of these.
Wow.
Kind of a top, like former top prospect from the 90s.
Go for the Brewers Cubs because the played third base is easier to name a Cub. Okay.
Tyler Houston.
Houston.
Cool.
There you go. That should be under 1%.
0.3.
0.3. Let's go.
Yeah, you guys are crushing it on this. I'm not as good as I should be.
Who played third? Alex Gonzalez, I believe, was the shortstop in the Bartman game. Who played third? Or was it Alex Gonzalez?
No. Aramis Ramirez. Wasn't he the third? No.
No, he wasn't there yet. He would work.
Gonzalez had the ball go through his legs right before the Bartman.
He was the shortstop. Right?
Yeah. So he was not
third. He probably played third base, too.
Played third.
I don't know. Well, I'll give you another early 90s. Hector Villanueva.
Oh, God, great fat guy.
Or wait. No, he was a catcher.
Yeah, great fat guy, though. Loved Hector.
Great fat guy, you said?
Yeah, he was a great fat guy. Big fat guy. Harry Carey loved him.
Steve Buschel?
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. Yep, Texas and the Cubs.
I'm trying to think of other obscure Cubs third baseman. No, that might actually be above 1%.
Steve Buschel.
It's a good call.
0.9.
Okay. And now we just need literally any Cub born outside the 50 states.
You guys remember Carlos,
Hector Villanueva, I guess it worked for that.
Carlos Marmol, the flamethrower closer they had at one point.
A good one.
Trying to think of the Australians are good ones. How many Australians have played for the Cubs?
Oh, boy.
I can't even think of one.
Glenn Williams.
I can't either.
Grant Balfour, did he play for the Cubs?
I don't think so.
Liam Hendricks didn't play for the Cubs. White Sox.
You could really go any way with this.
Yeah.
We could go.
Go with Hector.
Well, I mentioned Hector Villanueva. He was their early 90s catcher. Played some outfield. Hector Villanueva. Dude,
this is gonna be good.
Yeah, this is gonna be.
Let's go here. 0.3.
11.
That's 11. 11 rarity score.
Well, and I screwed us with my two old school guys.
Well, but we greenlit those.
8%. Yeah, okay. I'm not happy with myself.
We'll take an 11. Okay. We'll take 11.
That's pretty good, guys. That's an 11 rarity score right there on the grid, led by Coach Trev. So should we be panicking over the 3-5 start here? Twins are hitting like 100 with runners in scoring position. Should we start putting guys on the trade block yet, I guess, is the question.
I think like the player in me, this is what I think. You're going to go through cold stretches throughout the year, especially with runners in scoring position. I think the fact that there's been a lot of guys in scoring position, I don't want to say a lot of guys, but there has been opportunities. That's a good thing. And then, yeah, I mean, it just takes a little bit of time, or you can just view it. Like I said, it's part of the season. You're going to go through hot streaks and you're going to go through low streaks. And that's what I'd consider we're going through right now. I don't love all the at-bats that I've seen taken with runners in scoring position. I do think the Twins have been a little bit of kind of passive at the plate when I watch the games, which is interesting. So, you know, that can, if you're hitting well and you're taking good pitches, then you say, oh, they're not passive. They're just being patient. Like, so just kind of the results definitely matter when you're analyzing the sport. But I would say that, the pitching's looked pretty dang good for the most part. Bailey Obers had that one start against the Royals. I thought he was about to have another one yesterday against the Dodgers. Then he kind of settled in, which was nice.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't necessarily panic. Carlos Correa looks great. Byron's doing his thing out there in center field. I think those were two big things we wanted to see this year. Yep. I think the hitting will come along. And we can expect a little bit of regression from a guy like Julian, who's, you know, in his sophomore season. I think he'll figure it out, though. I think he's too good of a hitter. To not, you know, I mean, he's going to be like an 8 OPS type guy. I firmly believe that with Eddie Julian. So I guess my overall take is it's not time to panic.
So to put on your Coach Trev hat here too as well, here's a question. I'm going to ask you a question from my perspective, and you're a guy that played. So help me out here. Okay. What is your personal opinion on the approach of guys in, and in this case, Julian's a perfect example. He clearly has a great eye. Like he clearly knows the strike zone better than most home plate umpires.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, he's also taking strike three because, and here's my problem with that. First at bat of the game, you get called out. Okay. Now you sort of know the strike zone. You might not like it, but is there a point where you knew the strike zone well and would just protect because you knew that ball might be this much outside and your eye knew it, but you couldn't trust the home plate ump. Like
Angel Hernandez is not trustworthy. Well,
or CB Buckner. I mean, Laz Diaz. I can go through a whole list of these buffoons, but that's not the point. The point is, at what point are you being stubborn to a fault?
Yeah, you never want to get away from your strengths as a hitter. Like, his strength clearly is knowing the strike zone, but you do have to prepare for certain umpires or, like, you know, game by game case. Like, some of these guys, even though they're you know, past will show that they're pretty much in the strike zone, they might be having a bad day, or a catcher might be setting up a certain way that he's giving them that pitch. I think you need to be adaptable. I don't think you just have to be so stubborn and say that's a ball and I know it. It's great that you know it, because that means you're going to be a pretty good hitter, but you know, results matter. And when you're in the moment, yeah, you have to understand what's going on during the game. So I don't think that you just need to continuously expand your zone because the umpire is calling bad pitches, but with two strikes and runners in scoring position, you have to have that in your mind. Like, hey, I really, really need to protect right now. You don't want to just go chasing pitches and just be super aggressive if that's not your game. But there does come a point where you got to make the adjustment. It's like anything else in baseball. Like, yeah, you might do certain things well, but if you're getting exposed on one of your weaknesses, you better make that adjustment. And I think for Julian, you know, we have seen quite a few K's looking or a few of them. And I think that he'll learn that, that he does have to expand at certain points, depending on the umpire or game situation.
Yeah, Trev, actually, I asked Eddie about that yesterday, and he said he probably shouldn't, and especially with runners in scoring position, because obviously taking that bat leading off an inning versus runner in scoring position, going to be a little bit different of approach. And he said he should probably be maybe even looking for something early, because obviously the guy's not going to want to walk him. He's not going to want to take a pitch. So when there is a runner in scoring position for a Julian, or honestly for any one of these guys, is kind of not first, but first or second pitch hunting, is that kind of maybe your primary goal, to try to drive one and not just wait for the perfect pitch when you're already behind in the count?
I think so. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to look at it. I mean, some guys will say, look for the pitch you're going to get, not the pitch that you want to hit in those situations. Like, you know, most hitters want to sit fastball and they don't want to get off the fastball, but you know, what's that pitcher's best pitch? Cause that's what he's going to throw you in those situations. He's not just going to groove you a fastball to get ahead 0-1. That's not how it goes, especially when you bring in relievers. Those times when they're feeling the pressure, they're going to go to their best pitch. So you really just have to know the pitcher. And hey, maybe I don't want to hit a slider. Maybe like it's a really tough pitch to hit. But if that's what I'm going to get, then I really got to be diligent about zoning it up and seeing, you know, okay, here's a tunnel where it needs to come out of for it to be a pitch that I can handle. And then you have to make the adjustment that way. So it is still a case by case scenario, but I do believe that when you're in those positions where you're hitting with runners in scoring position, you have to be a little bit more flexible and adaptable, because you can't just go up there hunting heaters. You can't go up there just looking for the exact pitch that you think that you can slug on, because they're not going to give it to you. They understand the situation. This is where they buckle down the most, these pitchers. So they're going to go to their best pitch. Most of the time, they're swing and miss pitch, and the catcher knows that as well. So you got to be a student of the game, like almost at all times, and it's going to change. Like your approach has to change. Shoot, a bat to a bat, sometimes pitch to pitch. And that's where just a little bit more seasoning in the big leagues will help, you know, a guy like Julian. He'll start to understand that, okay, like I'm not this rookie anymore. They're not just going to come challenge me. Hey, people know you're a good hitter, dude, and they know what you can do with the plate. So now they're going to do as best they can to get you out of your comfort zone. And, you know, it's okay sometimes to get out of your comfort zone. Show them that I'm going to hack on this slider. Because then they might come back with a pitch that you want to hit. So it's just this ever changing, you know, chess game, if you will.
Who was the umpire a couple days ago? The score sheet came out and he missed like 10 calls in the first two or three innings.
Miller.
And nine were Brennan Miller.
Yeah.
Brennan Miller.
Yes.
Yeah. Naga
Brennan Miller. horrible.
So like, just on the subject of human beings trying to, because like, dude, pitchers, the average velocity of these relievers is like 95 miles an hour. They're all throwing crazy movement. And we all sit here watching baseball games on like our 65 inch high def TVs. Yeah. Like the umpires are crappy now. It's like, no, you're not. Our dads were watching games on like 27 inch Zenith TVs that you had to like slap the top of to see, like, is it fair that everyone in the ballpark, everyone watching at home has access to MLB.com, Baseball Savant, K-Zone, except for the one guy making, like, where do you stand on the electronic strike zone at some point, I guess, is my question.
I like the challenge more than, so I guess that is kind of an electronic strike zone. I like the challenge aspect of it more than just having a, you know, a straight across the board electronic strike zone. For some reason, I like having an umpire back there. It seems like real baseball. And if you're, and I think that kind of adds to a little bit of the drama. We've seen it happen in the minor leagues. You know, the challenge doesn't take long. So if people are worried about that, like giving seconds back on a game, like you just tap the helmet and go. I like that because you don't, as a hitter, there's nothing worse than taking a good pitch, you know, in a big situation. And, you know, instead of being striking out, now you're 3-2. Like there's nothing worse than that. So I think that's where I lean is just give me the ability to challenge a call. But I don't love getting rid of them completely.
Would you do like three challenges a game? Do you have a number that
they're all gone? First guy up,
50 challenges can't be unlimited. Yeah.
Two.
I mean, tennis, they have like the Hawkeye system where you just throw your hand up and, you know, they figure it out.
I don't know if unlimited is the right way to go about it. Cause I do feel like there'd be a ton of, you know, calls. Yeah. It'd be too much. No, so there has to be some limit or, I don't think you can penalize people for being wrong. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But yeah, some sort of limit.
So here's what I don't
Or maybe even an inning, like, hey, you can't do it until the seventh inning or something like that.
Yeah, so, high leverage or something.
So I like the idea. Like the challenge does seem like it keeps the umpires involved, but it also allows a terrible call to be corrected. But here's the thing I've never gotten, Trevor. Why on earth does everyone in an umpire crew get home plate? Like, to me, that's what makes no sense. Now you probably had a group of guys that you thought were really good at it. And sure, it is a unique skill. Like if I'm umpiring first, second or third, that ain't the same as trying to call pitch after pitch. Why don't they adjust it and pay more? Like Angel Hernandez should never get the plate.
It's pretty fun when he does, though. You know, you never know what's going to happen.
See him against the Yankees.
Yeah, it's. I agree with you, and really, it's. And I don't want to be an ageist, but it's the young guys who are good at it because their eyes work better. I don't think that's like a.
It's not.
That's
right.
Just like a thing. I mean, I'm getting up there too, guys. I'm almost 40 years old. I'm turning 38 in June. Like things are, you know, a little bit more difficult for me as the time goes on. Like that's when you got a guy that's. I mean, my mom is about to go have cataract surgery, and she's 60 years old. Like.
Right.
Her eyes aren't working the same. I can't even imagine her getting behind the plate trying to call balls and strikes, especially like you said, how hard these
plus they
got to
pee every two innings too. You're holding your bladder, you know, you can't see the pitches. It's tough.
I'm 54. I don't want to go through what we have to go. I'm not going to.
But you know, I mean, the job security is unparalleled in today's society. It's crazy. It there's no punishment. There's no way to fire these guys. Like, they just go until they don't want to go anymore. And why would you ever quit this job? You're making $300,000-$400,000 a year. Getting to watch and be a part of Major League Baseball games, like it's kind of, I mean, is it one of the better jobs in the world?
Well, but it also makes no sense because sports on the field in all sports is based on age discrimination. Like players get chased off. Players get chased off. Why? A lot of times because they're too old. So like that, it makes no sense that there's this one group of people, you know, Joe West just kept working.
The cowboy. That's right. This is mine.
Again, like, why would you ever quit that job?
You're right.
Like, but you travel around in a nice, you know, I'm sure they're all flying first class. If I had to guess, like I'm sure the association does that for them, but it's just, man, I would never give that up.
Hell of a union too, to work for. They got your back on every single thing. Like it's,
and then you have to answer questions.
Yeah,
you don't even have to answer questions after a bad call. You screw a game up. I don't know.
Yeah, we could actually we could have used Armando Galarraga for one of those Tiger squares. That was 15 years ago now, and this dude has a perfect game going, and they did finally put the instant replay in, but like Jim Joyce is doing the best he can at first base, but he's a human, and everyone in America sees that that's the wrong call on a perfect game, and he gets death threats because why, you know? Let's help these guys out.
The craziest thing about that is we go back and change things all the time in our box scores, change it from a hit to an error, you know, all the time it happens. And for some reason, we can't do that one.
Yeah. How about that? Like, that's not a perfect game in the history books, right? I mean,
it's crazy because it doesn't affect the hitter either. Was that an error or was that a hit?
I think it was just a hit, right? It was like a dribbler.
Yeah,
I think
it was like an infield single. But I'm pretty sure that guy would be like, all right, take that one hit away from me. It's okay.
Yeah. Who got that hit, by the way?
I saw a note that they now have, I guess it's been extended. The official scorers and baseball now have 7 days to change calls. So they have a week to change calls, but to your point, you can't go back and say, yeah, you know what? That guy was out by a lot.
Nothing it's a was perfect more, game. That really, really means something. How many have there been in history?
18, 20, yeah, like 20. 20 or something. Yep.
By the way, Mike Redmond grounded out for the second out of the ninth. And then it was Jason Donald that hit a soft ground ball to Miguel Cabrera at first. He had to range to his right.
Yep.
He backhands it and then flips to Galarraga, who was covering. And
it's like, hell of a play.
Yes. Yeah.
It was.
It's not an easy play.
Yes. Man. Yeah, that was pretty wild.
It was.
So, yeah, go ahead, Dex.
I was going to say, Trev on Kirloff, who he got the day off on Monday because they were playing a lefty in Paxton. But in general, that dude, he's become a triple machine, which is hilarious because I never envisioned that guy roping triples. But it just looks like now that he's healthy, he's finally kind of envisioning the hitter that everyone thought he could be outside of the injuries always lingering him down over the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, the skill set is 100% there. And a lot of the times when I watched him last year, I kind of had him in that category where, like, he doesn't get off balance much. And when I see that from a hitter, I really think they have a chance. They can really, you know, put up some numbers, because if you're kind of on everything and your balance is there, it means you can get the barrel to all these different pitches. And the fact that he can go to the opposite field as well as he does with power, I mean, you combine those two things and that really, you know, that's the start of a very, very good hitter. So that's why I was really, really high on him last year when I watched. You know, I'm looking at his stats right now. He had 28 walks to 80 strikeouts. That surprised me big time. I felt like he had a little bit better control of the strike zone. And didn't swing as much as those numbers support this year. 2 walks, 3 strikeouts. He's still 26. So, like, he's still, like, kind of entering his prime. Only 737 plate appearances at the big league level. So when you see stuff like that and, like, the way he's going about his business now, it tells you that there's definitely room for improvement over what I would consider last year. I mean, he ended last year with a 793 OPS, 117 OPS plus. That's a pretty dang good hitter at the big league level. But there's room for improvement on that. And I think we're seeing that early on. And now it's just about, you know, continuing that, being as consistent as possible in whatever he's doing, whatever his routine is right now. He's going to have to make adjustments as the league adjusts on him. But I think he's very, very capable of doing that. And he kind of has the right mentality as well. When you're around him, he's quiet, he's stoic, but he's also very determined to be a good hitter. And I feel like the emotions aren't so high and low. Like, he's pretty even keeled. And so, like, there's a lot of things to really, really like about Alex Kirloff.
Hey, in the last couple minutes here, we want to throw one dumb baseball question at you, presented by our friends at Fulton Brewing down in the North Loop, just a block and a half away from the outfield entrance.
You've many had a Fulton Brewing. Oh my gosh, yeah.
Just walk out of the stadium with your little baseball bag and grab an IPA. So they're also helping to present our Purple Daily draft party at the Fillmore, which is also just down the street from Target Field, on April 25th. So if you're looking to pregame on April 25th, you can literally walk across the street from Fulton to the Fillmore, and you can join us for some action that night. So there's a Twins game at noon, and then maybe it's Twins game at noon, Fulton late afternoon, and then go to the Fillmore for the draft party. But Fulton has you covered with beer, seltzer, a full menu to keep your hands busy from the pre-party until the draft party. So we appreciate Fulton Brewing jumping on board here at Score North. What here's a dumb baseball question for you. How many plate appearances before you can tell kind of what a hitter is in general? Like, it's this many plate appearances, or is it more age-based? Is it age-based or plate appearances in the bigs?
I feel like I've been talking about this for, quite often lately. It's interesting you ask that question. I think it's case by case for sure. The common number that gets thrown around, and I guess maybe this is old school baseball now, is like 1,500 plate appearances before you can really judge what kind of player you are at the big league level. I would say it's somewhere up. I would say like two full seasons. So whatever that is, around 1,000 plate appearances, something like that. Like that's when you really, because you'll have, you know, the beginning of your career when guys are going to challenge you. They're going to throw you a fastball away. And what can this guy do with a fastball away? Once that goes on, okay, let's start mixing him up. Let's bust him in and throw some soft stuff away. How does he react to that? And so you initially get challenged a lot your first year, and then the second year is when they have a scouting report on you and they know what you handle. They know where your hot zones are, your cold zones are, and they'll start to aggressively attack those cold zones. And it's how can you handle that? So I think after the second year, when you've shown the ability or the inability to make those adjustments, that's when you can kind of see what kind of hitter you're going to be. I think
like Tom Kelly used to say, 1,500.
I think that's where I got it from. TK and Guardy, like they just put that in my mind, and I was like, okay, well, I got some time then. You know, I stink now, and I still got some time.
Do we still do Good Morning America at Twin Spring Training, or has the new regime scrapped that? It's been a while since I've been to spring training.
I mean. If TK's there, they're going to do it.
They used, like, you should explain as we wrap here. Like, Good Morning America, these guys, they would just send all the infielders to this small little infield-only practice field. And there'd be, like, 17 baseballs flying in every which direction. It was organized chaos, and that's how you guys started, like, pretty much every day at spring training, right?
I loved it. It put pressure on you. You know, in a time where, in spring training, where you don't have a lot of pressure, like, you need those pressure reps. So, like, TK... you'd have guys hitting you ground balls, and TK would come to your station and roll you one out of his hand. And so it's like already weird to be getting a ball rolled to you, because there's not a lot of like velo on it. Like the harder the ball is hit, the more it sticks in your glove. Like those slow ones can rattle around a little bit, but you had to make the play. And if you didn't make the play, like he would just let everyone know that you didn't make the play and just like roast you. So it was very stressful, especially for a young guy who I was experienced some throwing issues. I wasn't exactly the most accurate. So really it made you focus a lot. I'll say that. I don't think they do it anymore.
It feels like a work hazard now.
I think it's Tom Kelly Field, isn't it?
Yes.
It is.
So it's still there, but no, I think they stopped. Hey, speaking of plays, let's just at least touch on that Buxton play last night. How great was that to see? Like I've always been a fan, because I mean the poor guy has been hurt so much. He's a guy you've never doubted. Like his desire is there. This is not a guy who's hurt and then dogs it. This guy works his ass off. But just as a baseball fan, how great was that to see that play last night? Because it was a special play.
It was crazy to see. And I started to think about, like, what if Byron Buxton was on a different team? I feel like I'm emotionally attached to him because, A, he was my teammate. Two, he plays for my team. If I was a fan of a different team, how would I view Byron Buxton? And I think he's kind of like a universally loved player. Like people realize and see the talent that's there on the field. So, if you're a fan of the game, you want to see those players play. And last night, that was just a prime example of what he can do. Not only like diving. Okay. Like diving is great. You know, a lot of guys will dive. The ball is just kind of right there. They just have to get that little extra extension. But when you're airborne for like what it seemed like a full second before the ball gets into your glove, like you're literally flying to the baseball. Like that's what that one was, and
it's crazy.
He had to have full extension to catch it. It was incredible, and he almost doubled him off. Like it was,
incredible. Like I think his bat. We'll kind of see if his bat comes around, but just him roaming around center field, it lowers ERAs. He's literally like, if you're a believer in like wins above replacement, in his past, he's been worth multiple wins above replacement just with his glove and his legs.
Yes.
And he still looks like he hasn't lost much of a step, even though he's like 30 now, which is pretty crazy.
He looks great out there, man. He really, really does.
Yep.
It's a lot
so
of
there
fun
he is,
watch.
Coach Trev. It's Trevor Plouffe Tuesday is here on the Score North Twin Show, rocking that immaculate grid. Great stuff, man.
Nice work, man.
Thank you. Let's go get these Dodgers. Come on now. Who is it? Glass now tonight against Varland?
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Let's go get like get Glasnow out of there. 4 2/3. Work some counts. You know, or just maybe win tomorrow. We could try that too.
What are you supposed to do with these guys though? Really, like the Dodgers, like are you gonna pitch around the first three guys of their lineup?
Dude, it's nuts.
Load the bases for Will Smith.
I know. Poor Bailey Ober. He's trying his absolute best, and everyone's just and like, who else can you? How else can you stop those three guys?
He settled down, which was really, really nice to see. Because the first couple guys of the game, I started to think to myself, man, maybe somebody does have something on him.
Yeah,
you know, we talked about that, and you know, I couldn't find anything. I didn't see anything when I went over the video, but I was like, dang, maybe they do have something. But then he settled down, pretty good.
He's clicking now. He's got the ERA down to 12. It's going to literally take him like a month and a half of similar performances to get that thing back down. It's down to 12. It's going to keep chipping away. I think he will.
I think he's going to have a lot of good starts in a row here.
I stand for Bailey Ober myself. So we'll see what happens. Good. All right, Trev. Good stuff, dude.
See you, Trevor. Thanks.
We'll see you next week here on the Score North Twin Show.